Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
This is Happiness Solved with America's happiness coach, Sandy Scarlatta.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. I am so thrilled you're here. Happiness Solved is dedicated to giving you content that is empowering, motivational, inspirational, and of course, a dose of happiness. It's my way to give back to the world and share other people's stories. This thing called life can be challenging, and my guests share their amazing stories, wisdom, and life lessons that demonstrate anyone can choose happiness. You see, happiness is a journey, not a destination. I am Sandy Scarlatta, America's happiness coach, author of Happiness Solved. I'm also a retired U.S. national and international figure skating coach. I have a gold medal in ice dancing. I've been a certified life coach since 2004, and I've been inspiring others to shift their mindset and choose happiness for over 20 years. I am so excited to share that my next book is coming out soon. I am a co-author in the fastest-growing personal development book series in the world with Jim Lutz and Jim Britt. The really cool thing is that the foreword was written by the one and only Les Brown, and for my copies, I'm on the cover with him. If you would like a free copy when it's available, email me at sandy@sandyscarlatta.com. Thank you so much for listening, and I am so grateful for you. The Sean French. Look at you. The Determined Society. So great to see you, my dear. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's so nice to see your smiling face and hear your voice. It's been so long. So this is a pleasure.
It has been. Yeah. It has been. It's been way too long. And we were talking about so many great things before I pressed record. And I'm like, okay, we need to stop because we're already having this amazing conversation.
Which is never like an issue with us. We always have amazing conversations. So I respect that. It's great.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm looking at your bio that you sent me and I want to talk about all of that, but you've got a really great story that goes back a long time when you were a baseball player. And you know, I come from a family of baseball. My parents were part owners of the Wilmington Blue Rocks that used to be a farm team of the Kansas City Royals. And they owned that forever until my father passed away in 2016. And then they sold their shares. So baseball has just been in my blood. My son played and I just love it. And I love that. It kind of connected me with you because I never forgot that when you were talking about, you know, your journey with baseball. So can you share that story? Because I think it's a really powerful one.
Absolutely. You know, I didn't know that about you, by the way.
Oh.
So that's really cool. You know, it all started when I was a kid. You know, I had, very few male role models in my life, right? However, my uncle and my cousins, mostly my uncle, right, was just the guy for me. Like I looked up to him and every time I saw my uncle, my eyes lit up and it was just like Santa Claus walked through the door year round, right? It's like, this is my guy. And he was into baseball. He was really, really good. You know, I used to go watch him play in junior college and even before in like his summer competitive leagues. And I remember being the young boy. I don't have very many memories as a young child, but I can remember being, you know, two or three out on a baseball field watching him and my cousins play. I mean, it is a core memory of mine, right? You know, and I just used to have all these allergies to where my eyes would get red and they'd swell up and I'd be in pain, crying. I couldn't see. And my mom was like, my grandma were like, hey, you got to get home. Let's go. I'm like, I would just throw fits. Like, you are not taking me away from this baseball field. It was, for me, it was something so special, just the energy. And see, to me, baseball is beautiful. And so it put me in a different state mentally at a very young age. When I was seven, I started playing. It wasn't the best, right? But I was young. I was 7 years old. And I never, you know, once I started moving up, you know, year after year, people started noticing, like, you're pretty good. You have some skills. So once I got into high school, you know, it was like, let me get through this. I want to go play at a four-year university and I want to play professional baseball. And, you know, all the while, you know, my parents really supported me. They got me everything that I needed as far as baseball equipment and, you know, all these different lessons so I could hone in my craft with catching and, you know, hitting and all that kind of stuff. The one thing, though, that I would have to highlight is my father was so hard on me to a point where it triggered this perfectionist complex. So nothing I could do was ever good enough. It was always, I'd get in the car after the game, super excited. You know, I went 2 for 4 with a single and a home run, maybe a strikeout and a pop up. And I'm on cloud nine. Right? I had three RBIs, 2 hits,
yeah.
Blew one out of the ballpark.
That's amazing.
Right. And I would get in the car, yeah. Super excited. You see that, man? I'm like, yeah. Peacocking everywhere. It's like, dude, what was up with that strikeout? What the F is wrong with you? That sucked. You know, oh, and then in the third inning when that ball went off your glove, what were you thinking? You can't drop balls like that behind the plate. No one's going to trust you. And then you had a pass ball in the fifth inning. And I'm like, oh my God, you're going, you know, I didn't know this term at the time, but it was like, he was going down to the most micro level of everything that I was doing and just ripping it apart. Right. So I grew very resentful. And in fact, to this day, I don't have a relationship to my father because he still tries to do it. Now I'm a grown ass man and I have children and a wife of my own. And I don't choose to have that energy in my life because I want to break that cycle. You know what I'm saying? Yes. I don't want to continue that. So the point is, while he may have wanted the best for me, it was a constant tear down. Right. And so I go into my adult life and into Division I college baseball at LSU. Now I'm with the big boys. I'm in the Southeastern Conference. This is the premier baseball school in the whole country. And I had zero confidence in myself. And all I did was continue to mess up, have a scarcity mindset, injury after injury. And to a point where after my senior year, it was a bust. You know, like I didn't excel the way I wanted to. But the reason I tell that story at such great length is because it taught me something very, very special. There's always going to be things that you can improve on. It's how you perceive those things that matter. What you don't know, you don't know. So back then it was just like, okay, I suck. I'm terrible. I'm never going to amount to anything if I don't play professional baseball. Now I could look at it and be like, wow, what a valuable lesson. You know, I could have controlled how I accepted those things that he was saying. But what I did is I allowed it to tear me down because that was my choice. I chose to believe it. And so this is really kind of fed into what I do now. And I'd still battle it, right? Because it's a core belief. It's something that's ingrained in me. So I'm always having to fight this. But at the very macro level, baseball to me is just something so beautiful that I always joke about it with my wife. Baseball is my mistress. You put me on a baseball field, I turn into that guy where I just want to be between those lines and coach and be a part of it. So while it is, you know, something I love so much, but it's also something that can grab a hold of me pretty quickly and not let go.
Yeah. Well, wow. Thank you for sharing all of that. And I love that you said you want to break the cycle with your children, because I have done that myself with my son from with a whole different perspective, but you can do that. Like, you don't have to carry on those things from your childhood and the way you were raised. Cause you know, and you know, you've got 3 kids, you know, you're not handed an instruction manual, right? You don't know what's best. And we don't know, but what I really loved about what you were talking about, and I work with a lot of amateur athletes right now. And one of the biggest things that I'm noticing is the relationship between them and their parents and the things that their parents are saying has such a profound impact on their athleticism. And I know that the parents aren't meaning to do that, right? Mm-hmm. They have their best interest at heart for their kids. They're trying to help, but they don't know that. So it's all about really, like, now we know as an adult, when we're hearing that constructive criticism, like, we can take it with a grain of salt, but as children, they don't. And, you know, so that's kind of the thing, is like, you know, educating. I'm on this mission to educate young adults that whether it's a parent or a friend, you don't have to, you know, it's not about you, it's about them, mm-hmm. right? Like, what other people think of you is none of your business. But as a child, you really take that to heart when somebody says something.
You know, it's true. You want to please the ones that mean the most to you, and it's usually your parents, right? Your parents can do no wrong. They can be the most effed up individuals, and you wouldn't know. The only thing that you know is that's mommy and that's daddy. Right. You look up to them, and as a boy, you look up to that dad. You get to a certain age, you know, where you get to be 8 years old, and it's all about dad, 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 dad. And whatever dad says, it is like an immediate freaking download. Straight up, that does not leave, right? So when I talk to my son and my daughters, I do my best, and so does my wife. My wife is so good at this. It's all about empowerment of themselves. Like, this is nothing like, you know, you're doing this wrong. It's, hey, how was your day? What could you have done better today?
Yeah.
How did you help one person today? So you talk about, you know, what we're doing right there is we're trying to get those critical thinking skills of like, what could I have done better, but have them author that thing. Not right. Like, hey, you know, Bobby, like, that was terrible. Like, you could have done better at this. It's like, what could you have done better?
Well, you're giving them empowering questions to ask themselves.
Absolutely. So, you know, this is the thing, like you said, like, there's no manual to parenting, but the reality is sports parents are the freaking worst.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Because a lot of times, you know, and again, the ones that are extreme, there's two types of extreme people, right? And then I believe this is where they come from. One, the dad that's never done jack shit. Okay. And he's living vicariously through his son or his daughter. And he's just hammering on him. He's got the claws into him and just like really objectifying them as it pertains to the sport. And then there's the other parent that has like high level, high achieving, like big leaguer, NFL star, and believing that that child is automatically going to follow in his or her footsteps. And so they get even more aggressive because like, well, I've done it. Now my son's going to do it. Like, I was an athlete. You know, I played pro beach volleyball. Well, my daughter's going to play pro beach volleyball. Your son may like Pokemon. Hate to tell you that. Your daughter may like doing cosmetology things and not going and playing sports, and that's fine too. But that's the thing. These parents hold on and they grab on so tight. And then those kids, those young athletes never become what their parents feel they should.
So real quick, I used to be a procrastinator and I was not happy about it. But for months now, I have been using this amazing little elixir called Magic Mind that helps me to stay focused and stay on track with everything I have going on without any jitters or crashes. It helps me to go from being in my zone of excellence to thriving in my zone of genius. Magic Mind comes in individual small bottles, kind of like a shot. Each one contains a magical combination of 12 active ingredients to make it the world's first productivity drink. These combined ingredients will help you keep going and stay focused, decreases stress and inflammation in the body, improves blood flow and cognition, and has immune support. If you're like me, I totally recommend you go check them out at www.magicmind.co/happiness and join a community of go-getters. You can also use my discount code HAPPINESS to get 40% off your first subscription. My 40% off code only lasts for 10 days, so check them out right away. That's www.magicmind.co/happiness. The link and the code will also be in the show notes. Now back to today's interview. Yeah. Well, I learned as a skating coach, you know, I was dealing with so many parents that I swear I would never do that to my kid. And I put my son on the ice when he was 2.5. And by the time he was 4, he was burnt out. And I'll never forget when he was like 10 years old, he wanted to play ice hockey. And he knew how to skate, but not that great. Mm-hmm. And I'm up in the stands watching and I'm like, oh my God, I can't. I'm like hiding my face. I'm like, I can't believe this is my kid and he doesn't know how to ice skate.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was like, and you know what? It. But I'm like, hey, oh well, you know what? And he just, you know, like with my kid, he just extremely talented baseball player, extremely talented basketball player. But he was like, I don't want to play basketball 6 days a week. He's like, why would I want to do that? He goes, I only want to play once a week. I'm like, okay, because you can't force that.
Yeah.
And I knew that if you want to be an elite athlete, you got to get out there 6 days a week, period. But yeah, you have to want to do it, right? It has to come from within. The parents can't push the kids to do it.
And I think what's a great argument too with this, and I think this is something that's very controversial in today's youth sports, is at what age is that the big deal?
Yeah. That's right.
At what age? Because I'm looking back at this, and this is where I speak from experience, right? It's like, okay, my son says he's going to go to LSU and play baseball. I'm just going to go play at the best college baseball school in the country because that's where my dad went. Okay, cool. Like, hey, listen, when it's time, and if that's where you want to go, we'll get you the instruction and the work that needs to be done in order for you to achieve those goals. So a lot of parents, a lot of dads right now are doing all that stuff with their kids at 6 years old.
Yes,
and I don't believe in that. So for me, I didn't really put the work in, like with lessons and everything like that, until I was, 11 or 12? Maybe 12 or 13. I think that's a good age to start individual construction, you know, instruction with high level hitting coaches or specialty coaches. But there's kids out there now. I'm seeing people, you know, parents put their kids in the cages with these former big leaguers at like 3 years old. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, that is horse shit. You know,
because
like,
they're just going to get burnt out.
Let them fall in love with the game.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what parents are missing now, right? They're missing the opportunity to seduce their children with the game.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a weird terminology, but think about it. It's like, okay, if I'm allowed to love something and just grow tremendously in love with something just by playing it and experience it for the purity that it is, you're creating an absolute dynamite performer in your daughter or in your son when they become 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. Because they're not burnt out.
Right.
They understand it. And at that point, even too then, in high school, there's not a whole lot of people putting 6 days of work in. There's really not. You know, and the ones that are next level. But like,
well, it depends on the sport too.
Exactly. For me, for baseball, I would hit, you know, Monday through Friday and, you know, before practice, after practice a little bit, and that was it.
Yeah.
But it was never to what my dad wanted me to work. But you know what? It worked out.
Yeah.
You know, like your kids will find your way, parents, for those of you that are listening. They will figure it out. And it's not about you, it's about them. Yeah.
They absolutely will. So that's a good segue into what you're doing now. You're a sales performance coach. I want to hear about your story, going dead broke to high six figures in 6 months. What the heck happened?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. So it's funny. A lot of people ask me when they get on the phone with me, is that like one of those marketing hooks? No, it's not. It's actually what happened. So I went when my son was like 11 months old, 12 months old, I was still a teacher and a baseball coach. And I would leave the house before he was awake, and I would get home most nights when he was already asleep. So there would be 3 or 4 days in a row I wouldn't see my kid, and I lived with him. You know, I was like, this is not the jam. This is not what's going on. And I could always remember not having any money. It's like, this is painful. And then at the end of the school year here in Florida, what would happen is you would have balance of contract to where, you know, they pay you out for the 12 months. So whatever was remaining on your contract out of that 38 grand, they would pay you a lump sum. So we'd get like a $6,000 gross check at the end of the school year. And it's just like, oh my gosh, I'm like loaded now, because that's the most money you've ever seen. But what I quickly realized is like, I cannot create a life for my child that he can really truly benefit from just on that income for my own sake. Like, I mean, again, that I might get some blowback for that, because there's a lot of amazing teachers out there that is what they want to do, and they make it work. That's not what I wanted. All right. So I just want to be clear with that. For me, I wanted to create this legacy that my son and my future children can look at me and be like, wow, my daddy's just, he's out there doing it. And then I can go now, I can do the same. So I decided to get into sales. Good buddy of mine, Dan Tuffarello, it's funny that I'm telling this story a lot, because what happened was just a friend and a man doing something special for me because he believed in me, who's turned into part of my story. The guy gets more airtime than anybody, you know? So what's up, Dan? But you know, he hired me over at Paychex Incorporated, and it was, you know, business to business payroll sales. And, boy, did I really suck at it the first few months. I'm going to tell you, it was absolutely terrible. And I even tried to resign. I walked into his office after a mental breakdown in Marco Island, Florida, in the Publix parking lot, just in tears. Like, I just can't do this. This is just, I can't get out of my car with the anxiety. And, you know, people don't like me. They don't want to buy from me. So I tried to go, you know, resign. He's like, hey, listen, man, I told you I'd give you a year. You're going to give me the same respect. After a year, if you don't like this, you can go back and do whatever you want, but you're not going anywhere because I believe in you. And you are going to be one of the top reps in this organization by the end of this fiscal year. And I'm like, bro, you're high. But okay, whatever. So I went home that day and I just thought to myself, am I really doing everything I needed to do in order to be successful here? Like, and when I say that, was I doing the work? Absolutely. But was I being intentional? Did I have a real plan? I didn't. I didn't have a real plan. So I decided to create my own sales process and my own follow-up process and my own actual daily activity schedule. And I created it the night before, the next day, and I stuck to that day. And I took like 3 or 4 pages of notes, those big yellow sheets, you know, those big ones. Mm-hmm. My goal every day was to fill that up with 3 or 4 pages of notes. So while the call points was, I was told my KPI was 8 calls a day. I did 30 because I wanted the experience. I wanted to compile information. You know, there's the only real way to get real results is to go out there and do the darn work, right? But do it even more than is expected, so that way you have actual data. And what I quickly realized right away is like, man, I wasn't doing it like this. Like like before, I was just going from door to door and knocking and like walking out of their mat because I was having no results, but I wasn't taking the initiative to do it professionally like I am now, right? And so, I did that over and over again every single day for the next 6 months without fail. Like, it was part of my process. And what I quickly realized, within a month, my business started taking off. You know, I made, you know, 10 sales one month in the month of October for like, you know, $20,000. And the next month it was 28 grand, then 24 grand, then 26 grand, then 72 grand. And then it was back down to 14 because it was right after January, and then 60, 70, 80. And I'm like, oh my God, at the end of the year, I found myself at the top 15% of that company, just like he said. I earned the sales trip. And then that fiscal year, I made $107,000.
Wow.
And then from there, it went to 120, 146, 164. And then on and on and on. In my final year at Paychex, I ended up in the top, you know, 22 of the company, which is top, you know, 1.5%. And then switched it over to the medical company right before the pandemic, 3 weeks before. And I've been doing the same thing there, you know, exceeded quota the first year when I had no business doing it. And then the top 15 finish last year. So all because of, I just follow through what I said I'm going to do.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's really incredible. And thank you for sharing all that. So what are some of your, when you first started noticing, I mean, obviously I do know that it's a numbers game, mm-hmm. you know, so you, and I know, like, I used to own an IT recruiting company and I tracked how many placements we made. And I knew after 2 years of tracking that that we would get one hire for every 20 interviews. And it was like clockwork, clockwork. Sometimes there would be, you know, you'd get a placement and there'd be 30 more interviews and then you'd get another one. But it averaged out to every, you know, so what was your, like, so that was my way of tracking. And I'm just curious, and for other sales, you know, professionals that may be listening, what is your metric and what is your way? Do you have that formula? Like, and I know it varies from industry to industry, but is there like a general theme there?
Here's what I'll tell you. In the medical industry, it's very, very difficult because you have a daily run rate of disposable revenue. So it's really, really difficult to really compile that information, right? Because you're always selling, you're always making money. But here, I'll go back to Paychex. All right. Okay. So in that actual environment, it was, you need 8 end user presentations a week. You want to close, you know, you want to close 20% of those, whatever that number is. And you want to run 1 payroll a week. So that way you're at least running, you know, 4 to 5 payrolls per month, depending on if it's a 4-week or 5-week month. What I quickly realized is, okay, if my metrics are 8 EUPs, right, presentations, and then I want to close, you know, maybe 2 sales out of that, I started thinking, well, okay, so that's 8 payroll deals a month. And what's my revenue per unit, right? Because that was a big thing. If my revenue per unit was only $1,800, that's not a whole lot of money, because I would only get a cut of that, right? It'd be like 10% or 12% or 15%, whatever it was. So I decided to double down on my call set, because I knew if I made 8 targeted calls, I would have at least 2 presentations for that week. So if I do 30 a day, do the math.
Right.
And then I knew if I had all those presentations and my close ratio was 35% and my revenue per unit was at 2,500, then that's how I managed myself. And so, yeah, like, I think KPIs are great, but I think everybody's metrics are a little bit different. And the thing that drives me crazy about corporate America and individuals in corporate America as it pertains to sales is they say, okay, the company wants me to do 6 calls a day. I need to have, you know, and I have to have, you know, 6 first or 4 first meetings each week to get 1 proposal in to close 1 deal. But why is that all you're sticking to? Like, that's the minimum.
Right.
You know, if, and also on the flip side, if it's not working for you, you can't sit there and say, well, I'm doing what you're telling me to do and it's not working. Well, you may not be that skilled yet. You know, you may need, might need to be making like 24 calls a day.
Right.
You know, so it's just knowing your numbers. It's knowing, like you said, your close ratio, and it's also backing it into like, how much money are you looking to make?
Yeah.
And then you base your activity on that.
Right. And for those that aren't familiar with that, you take what you want to make and you just start going backwards. Okay. Yep. Do I want to make that? How many, you know, and you just go back and back and back.
Yeah.
So this has been such a great conversation, but I want to talk about mindset. We talked about mindset with for athletes. What are some mindset hacks for sales people in sales, for sales professionals? Because it's a stressful thing. You have to make your quota. You know, you've got, maybe you have a manager looking over you. You've got your own internal trying to drive yourself. Do you have any mindset hacks that you can share to help people flip that switch? If you're, you know, things aren't going your way, nobody's picking up, nobody's buying, nobody's saying yes. What are some, how do you flip the switch?
First of all, the first thing I never do is I never worry about my manager looking over my shoulder.
Okay, good.
I just, guys, if y'all are listening right now, the one piece of advice I could give you is never worry about your manager. You're worried about your manager because you know you're not doing your damn job. That's why you're worried. If you're actually doing the activity and being productive, you wouldn't be worrying about your manager, because your manager would be happy with you. So here's the mindset hack, okay, that I always default to. I do not make the result my goal. My goal every day is the activity. That is it. Straight up it. So sales professionals out there, whether you're in corporate America or you're running your own, you know, your own business with a coach, online coaching business, your goal every day should be the activity. And if you can check those activity boxes off at the end of the day and that you completed them with full intention, love and care and respect that it deserves, then you've won every single day. The results will end up coming. But if you focus on the result or the actual goal revenue or how much money you're going to make, you're never going to be happy. You're going to wake up in a state of, you know, lack of gratitude on a daily basis.
Right. Right. Cause it can't be about the money.
Mm-mm.
It can never be about the money.
Yeah. And I know you don't want more for people straight up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because when you're making it about the money, you have to peel those layers away and say, well, what is it that you really want? What will that money do for you? So, so money is just a tool. It's no different than your phone. It's just a tool.
Yeah. You know, it's the exchange of energy, right? That's all money is. And it gives you, it's that form of currency or energy that it gives you the freedom that you desire right? That's what, that's why people want to make a ton of money. It's not because they want to have the physical having of all the money. It's what it represents. So if you can tie in your activity to represent that freedom and that love and what it's going to do for you, money comes.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I love that. This has been really great. Now, real quick, talk about your book.
Oh, wow.
Brought up your book yet. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. So my book's called Unstoppable, The High Performance Mindset. And it really just outlines the high performance habits that I implemented on a day-to-day basis to go, like you said, from broke to six figures in 6 months. That is all it is. And then I also have like 8 digital trainings that go along with that, that kind of just outline it. But I mean, really that book right there is from A to Z, how I did it. And actually give tangible tools in there and some tactics to break that down and achieve it. And listen, that could, the high performance mindset can be used in whether you're in sales or any other type of business. It really doesn't matter. These are known performance tools that you can use to measure, you know, where you're at every single day.
Love it. That's amazing.
It was fun.
And oh yeah. I mean, putting a book together is, for me, like it's a daunting task for some, but for those of us that have done it, it's just, there's nothing like it. It's just getting that out and then holding it in your hand and like, Lastly, the determined society. I see it behind you. So for those of us who are just listening, he's got this amazing sign behind him that says the determined society. And I love the kind of, that's almost like a medical thing, right? Like a, what is it?
Like a heart rate?
A heart rate. Yeah. It's like a heart rate. So talk about the determined society.
So real quick though, that heart rate is actually, everybody thinks it's a heart rate. What it really is the line of success.
Okay.
Oh, so look at it where it starts with the. It is like flat. There's nothing going like, oh, cool. I'm having success. Then it's down. It's up. Then you peak and then you fall. Yeah. And you're back up. Success is never a straight line. You know, there's peaks and valleys and we have to be able to ride that proverbial roller coaster through it. So the Determined Society podcast was created because I was sick and tired of living a life and seeing people live a life that they were not determined to go chase their damn dreams. It's always an excuse. Can't do it because of this. Can't do it because of the X, Y, and Z. My husband won't let me. My wife won't let me. Well, I have 3 kids. Like, so what?
Right.
So what? So I created the podcast and, you know, for the first season, you know, I was almost embarrassed to say it. Now I kind of wear it as a badge of honor. I was doing that first season in my SUV, doing solo cast, just venting into my phone and just publishing it on Anchor. And then what I quickly realized is like, wow, I can, you know, I have a voice. People are saying that I can be really good at this. Let me try to figure out how I can have guests on. And then the whole Zoom thing happened, right? And Riverside and all that. So it went from quickly just a bunch of solo casts the first season with maybe one or two guests to pretty much guest only. And I've had the opportunity to, you know, interview some of the most amazing entrepreneurs and influencers in this business and hear it and have them tell their story to my audience. And I just found out the other day that it is ranked top 10% globally.
Wow. It,
you know, and I, when I heard about this metric that I could go look up and I'm like, oh my gosh, it's like,
is that on Listen Notes?
Yes. It's Listen Notes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was really nervous, you know, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be bad. Like, maybe top, you know, 20, maybe 40%. And it said top 10% and the light bulb went out. I'm like, oh boy, that's even really marketed this effectively yet. All right. Cause I'm only one person, right? Yeah. Once I figure out how to market it and I'm on bigger shows, then that's going to explode. So my goal by the end of, you know, 2022 is to get that to just let me break into the single digits, man. Like, 9%. And then at the end of, you know, 2023, I'm shooting for top 5% in the whole globally.
Love it.
It's been amazing.
Yeah. And of course you can do that.
Yeah. The thing that I love most about it, you know, and this is the funny thing, you know, and I think you can attest to this. There's been no handouts.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have a back door to all these famous people.
Right.
It's simply been a voice memo.
Yep. You know, same.
You know, a message, an Instagram. and back and forth of their management team saying, don't do anything with this guy. He's nobody. And now those are my really good friends, and you know, they're here for whatever I'm doing. And, you know, I'm not going to say who it is, but I just locked down a face-to-face with somebody in California, is big in the industry, off of a video I sent him on Instagram.
Nice.
And this one is going to turn some heads.
That's so awesome. Well, dream congratulations.
Death. Thank you.
You're doing so many amazing things, and I love watching you and seeing your posts on Instagram. And before we finish up, is there anything else that you want to share with the audience that we haven't talked about thus far?
Yeah, two things. So if any of your audience is interested in grabbing a copy of my book, you know, it's just shipping and handling. All they got to do is DM me, Happiness Solved, right? Just DM me Happiness Solved, the name of the show, and I know where you're coming from, and I'll send you the link so you can get the book. The other thing is I just want to be very, very clear with this. I had this epiphany yesterday, a good friend of mine, Kyle Carnahan, and I had a conversation. He's like, hey man, you know, let me ask you a question. I've been thinking about this for over a year. Who gravitates to your work more, men or women? I'm like, dude, women, that's easy. And so from that, we really uncovered that I needed to pivot a little bit, actually a lot. So I'm creating this amazing program for women that is directed towards women sales professionals and entrepreneurs that are having a hard time with the alpha male minimizing who they are as a professional and as a salesperson and objectifying them, whether it's in the boardroom or just on an everyday basis. See, why is it that women have to prove their worth in business?
That's right.
Why is it that? Is it 1950? Because I don't think it is. So there is no man out there doing this for women. So I have created, and it's about to launch. We're doing some other things to tighten up the bolts on this thing. An ongoing mastermind for these women to come in, group calls every week, you know, female entrepreneur, celebrity entrepreneur guests. And I'm just going to pour into these ladies and turn them into the alpha in the boardroom.
Well, and when do you think that will be rolling out?
I'm looking to have that rolled out by 1st of December, actually.
Perfect. This will be released by then. So
boom.
There you go.
Pick up on that. If you're a woman and you're a sales professional or entrepreneur and you want to learn how to be a man eater in the boardroom, I'm your guy.
Awesome. And people can find you at thesseanfrench.com.
TheSeanFrench.com. Yes, absolutely.
And that's also your Instagram handle, right?
Yes. @TheSeanFrench is my Instagram handle. Absolutely. And they'll see a link tree. Once they get there, click on the link tree. Everywhere you can find me.
Perfect. Sean, thank you so much. I'm so happy we finally got this discussion recorded.
Me too.
And on to bigger and better things for both of us, for sure.
The pleasure's all mine. Thank you so much, Sandy.
Thank you. I certainly hope that you enjoyed today's interview. Thank you so much for joining me. And as always, I hope that you and your family are healthy and safe, and that your lives are filled with peace, joy, and happiness. Take care, everyone.